Well, Roosters fans, what a week it was to be out at Allianz Stadium celebrating the 307th appearance, Bells, of our greatest Rooster of all time. On behalf of Roosters Radio fans, family, and of course ourselves, congratulations to JWH going down in history as one of our greatest ever Roosters, but certainly our most capped Rooster. Well, Bells, the game was preceded by a beautiful ceremony, the 1974 team, a 50-year celebration of their great grand final victory, and they're a team very akin to this current mob of Rooster players. And to see JWH walk out and embrace his family in front of all of his teammates, coaches, staff, was something special.
Yes, Bush, what a game it was. 42-12 beating in the name of Jared Hargraves. It was awesome. Just to see him walk out, just set the platform for the game, the guard of honour from the 1974 side. And what I noticed during that, you know, going through, all the staff were there, all the coaching staff were there, his beautiful family were there, his three beautiful children, Zali, Harper and Hudson. And he, what I loved about it is when he came out, he walked out and he took it all in. He didn't rush through it. He didn't run out. He didn't. It was just a nice, calm walk. And, I mean, he's just such a mature leader of the club, and it just showed. And well done, Jared. Congratulations. It was awesome. He got the sin bin, but that's true Jared style. A bit of a hard call, I thought. But an excellent game for him, and just a great result for him as well.
Just a powerful game. You know, just the way he led, you could just see how inspired he was to hit that milestone. You can see what, obviously, you know, you've seen in interviews since, you know, the Cooper Cronk interview last night. But forgetting all that, right, that's all the fanfare stuff. When he takes that field, he gets white line fever. One of the recent ones that come to mind for me is Adrian Morley back in the, early 2000s, you know, and the Ricketsons and the Fletchers and the Mosses and the Fittlers were running around. He used to be the same. He was just such a high energy, just led from the front. And you just know when Jared's out there, you could see Sunday how he just took it to the St. George pack and everyone followed him like a, you know, not like pups. I don't mean disrespectful in saying that, but it's like, you know, Papa Bear's going in and they just won in all in. It was amazing.
Yeah, well, it was his day and he led from the front, so it was awesome. But also some other great, you know, highlights during the game. James Tedesco had a great game, I thought.
Outstanding, Teddy. One of his best, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And then Sammy Walker again, I think we say it all every week. But
that
he's
kicking
just,
game,
he's
Bells.
On fire at the moment.
He is on fire. And, you know, we're just, when you talk about Sam Walker, you're talking about someone who's going to be the next Origin halfback for Queensland. And I know he's not in any of the squads, and thank God he's not, because right now his form is amazing through this Origin period. And you can just see him put that little short kick in, this time for Victor Radley. They've just got an understanding. Every time Walker's got the ball in hand, they actually know what – it must be a signal. I haven't picked up on it yet, but they sort of, you know, look at each other. He looks like he's going to pass. All of a sudden, that little deft touch on the foot before you know it, one of our men are over the stripe.
Well, he executes it so well, so well. And Victor, first try scorer on the weekend, well done. Got a bit of a knock there in the second half.
He did.
That was a bit of a not nice to watch, you know.
Just got his head in the wrong position, eh?
I saw him today. The boys are up here at the moment. So you've travelled up from the Central Coast. We're actually in my little podcast studio here.
Well, it's
at
the
Impact
heartland
Gym.
Of the Roosters, remember, Bells.
That's correct. And the lads are up here on a two-day camp. So Tuesday afternoon at the moment, they've just finished day one. They've got another day tomorrow. And but we saw Victor. He's in the gym. He's training. He's looking well. He said he feels well. He's just got the 11-day stand down, which is the NRL, you know,
protocol,
11 days
yeah.
protocol. But we've got the bye this weekend, so that works out well for us.
Is it fair to say the home away from home for the Roosters on the Central Coast is the Impact Gym? That's for sure. Tick that box. But is it fair to say that this is the Nick Politis Central Coast Centre of Excellence, or
yes,
the Mick Esteeney, your husband, who player number?
Oh, gosh, 1106, I think.
1106,
oh,
played
gosh,
for the Roosters, first grade in 1996. I think Nick and Mick, I mean, this is the Mick Politis Centre of Excellence. Why don't we just give him the last name?
Oh, we'll just give him a little plug there. But, yeah, the boys are up here. They're all looking great. They're all looking great. We've got the bye this weekend. Which will give the boys some time off, rest and relax, and come back fighting fit for the next game. But, yeah, looking forward to seeing them train in here tomorrow again.
Can't wait. What a beautiful facility for those Roosters fans to get up on the Central Coast, get yourself to the Impact Gym and support Bells, our host from Roosters Radio.
Thanks for the plug.
Yeah, it's an amazing gym, and Robbo wouldn't have the boys here if it wasn't. You know that.
Now, listen, Craig, I'm super excited. We've got a great guest on our show today, Simon Jones, Jonesy. Head of performance for the club, Can't wait to speak to him, and we're going to just pick his brain in regards to all things performance and off the field training and whatnot. So it's going to be great.
I call him the mystery man. You know what I love the most is everyone's spoken so highly of him, and there's lots of banter within the club, and they say Jonesy loves a chat, so I can't wait to chat to him because that'll make two of us. But in all seriousness, he has just done such an amazing job. He's part of a team, right? There's Robbo and you know, there's the strength and conditioning coaches. There's Kingy, there's Justin Holbrook, you know, there's a whole suite of people, but you can see that Jonesy's heading up as the head of performance, you know, that whole team. And, you know, the players just look happy, they look aligned, they look super fit, they look super strong, the longevity looks great. So I can't wait to get some insights from Jonesy on, you know, the changes, what's happened, who he is.
Well, they tell us he likes a chat, so let's get right to this interview. You're on Roosters Radio and we'll be back with Simon Jones. Welcome back to Roosters Radio. Well, it's such an honour and a privilege to have in the studio with us our head of performance, Simon Jones. Jonesy, welcome to Roosters Radio.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Now, Simon, you joined the club in September 2023. Now, prior to that, you were the head of performance, athletic performance at the Super Rugby Highlanders for 3 years, I believe.
Yep, correct.
Also been involved in the All Blacks 15, strength and conditioning coach.
Yep.
The list goes on. Head of performance for the Japan rugby side for the World Cup.
Yep. No, back in, that was for the 2019 World Cup cycle. Lived in Japan for 3 years. It was a pretty cool experience.
Wow, that's awesome. And then I've also dug a little bit deeper. You got a uni degree in sports medicine, sports and exercise, and secondary teaching as well. Bit of a high school teacher.
Yeah. No, you've done very well there to dig up the past.
She loves the research, Jonesy.
Yeah. I can't say I was probably the model student, but when you fall into what you love, it comes pretty easy. Once I sort of found out maybe where I wanted to go, the study stuff came a bit simpler after that.
Oh, welcome to Roosters Radio.
Yeah, welcome. Well, I'll tell you what, Jonesy, lots of fans ask, who is that really good-looking bald man on the sideline? I thought it was me, but it's you, head of performance. And then we want to get to know on Roosters Radio, as we do with all our players, who is Simon Jones? And, give our fans an insight. Can I ask you first, before we take you back to where it all began, could you just define your role as head of performance? What is that define?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think probably across other clubs it's different. My remit coming in here was to really take a lot of the management of the staff probably off Robbo's hands so he could focus on the footy. There's a really talented and experienced group of staff here, so it's really just making sure that they've got the resource and support they need and that I align them the best I can to the footy program. So I'm sort of that conduit between Robbo and the rest of the staff. And as I say, just making sure we're all aligned and on the same page and hopefully, you know, we're all communicating really well. So just enabling the staff to do the awesome job they do.
Yeah. Well, mate, congratulations from the fans' perspective. We represent the fans on Roosters Radio. It seems like we can see it on the field, you know. The players seem healthier, fitter and happier than they've been, and it's a really gelled group. And obviously, you're one of many pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, but one that's really, really working well.
Yeah, no, it was an exciting piece to come into. We did do things a little bit differently in pre-season compared to previous years. But again, that was a great piece with Robbo where before he went off and did his walk to base camp, we started to have some more serious conversations and just asked him some questions really and challenged him that while he was away to come back with a picture of what he wanted. And obviously a lot of these listeners will know Robbo. He's an incredibly sort of insightful and talented, and he pretty much came back with the plan made up. And from there, you know, had to cross a few T's, dot a few I's, but it had, you know, really had sort of already decided a really cool structure of how we could do it. And then we just put the handrails and got us along after that.
You grew up in New Zealand in the South Island of Invercargill. What was your sport? Tell us a little bit about Simon Jones as a young man.
So just grew up just with my mum and my brother. Invercargill's the bottom of the world. Nowhere further south than New Zealand you can go. And like any Kiwi kid, loved rugby. So obviously, you know, wanted to play rugby. And then, did a bit of sprinting for a while. And that sort of took over and dominated my school years. Pursued that for school and out of school. Went reasonably well. And then obviously the love for rugby came back. But when you haven't handled a rugby ball for 4 or 5 years, I was pretty dodgy under a high ball and passing skills needed some work. The experiences I got with athletics, the world travel I got to do with that was a nice learning to take into probably a professional career. And then dabbled with a few other things, but high school down there. And then, as we alluded to earlier, went to Otago, started in the study. Southland was it's not a farming community, but it services the surrounding farming community. So pretty sort of humble beginnings. And ended up back there for my first sort of full-time S&C gig, which was with the South and Stags, which, you know, if you ask any of my friends who grew up with, would still be their favourite sporting team. You know, we're pretty loyal down there. So, yeah, and that was, again, people are pretty humble down there. So you soon got chopped down at the knees if you got a bit of wind in your sails, got a bit ahead of yourself. Yeah. So
and tough, right? It's a tough environment. Weather-wise, you know, it's beautiful in summer, freezing in winter. You got all the elements, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, we have. Yep, and you know, sort of the people are of the land, you know, yes. and things down there. So it was yeah, it was a great start because, as I say, they keep you well grounded, and we still get a message from a few people from, you know, 15, 16 years ago, making sure I'm still there. So yeah, it was a cool place to start out. So sort of 4 or 5 years with the rugby team there. And yeah, had some a lot of learning, some good success to start off the career, which is really cool.
I'm interested to know, was it 100 metre, 200 metre? What was your forte?
Yeah, I was a sprinter. Sprinter and dabbled in a bit of long jump. So, yeah. And then it was, something I pursued and loved for a long time. But, yeah, when you travel the globe, there's some pretty fast people out there. So I realised I needed to probably change direction.
Well, that must be great for the boys too, to have that experience come in as well in regards to that training and the sprinting and the explosiveness of, you know, speed.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's certainly helped me in previous roles. And you take, as we all do, we rob from everything that we do and from everybody else that we see, and we take the best bits. And I think the art of what we do is putting that together in the program at when and how it suits you, not just obviously taking like for like. In our current program at the Roosters, you know, Ryan's been doing a fantastic job in that space. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So it's been great to come in and just watch Ryan do his thing, to learn from him. You know, our philosophies are pretty similar, but when you see another practitioner, you know, doing something, it's always good to watch and pick up there. And yeah, the odd time you have to step in, you know, you've got some insight, some knowledge and some things there. So certainly a part of my role I have loved. Is, you know, is that special sort of speed, power side and on-field agility and things as well.
Jonesy, I know the Southland Stags is something very close to your heart. I can just see the energy and the smile on your face when you mention it. It's obviously really important to you. But you hit a great achievement by working with, you know, professional outfits in the South Island. You then also in the World Cup campaign in Japan, living there for 3 years. What was that experience like to actually be part of a World Cup squad going to challenge for the William Willibellis?
Yeah, it was amazing because I was probably feeling a little bit comfortable in a role that I had. And I'd been working with High Performance Sport New Zealand, which for our listeners out there is similar to the AIS. It's our institute for our, you know, Olympic sports and things. And then, yeah, got the knock from a coach down the corridor to see if I'd be interested. So I think I was missing team sport a wee, but it seems to suit me well. So, yeah, so we took the gamble. And as a coach and as a person, probably really developed me a lot. Like, our family had an amazing time over there. We relocated. And then, yeah, living and immersing in a different culture is an amazing experience. But as a coach, I probably went over there as, you know, a real people person. It was all about the conversation and knowing things, whereas apart from my body language and my energy, you know, I couldn't really communicate with them at a deeper level. So it had to become a little bit more about, you know, your data, your proof of your results, you know, using statistics and science a little bit more. So it was a really nice sort of shift at the time around, you know, where probably my strengths lie, and then to, you know, to where they are. And throughout our careers, you know, you sort of drift from that continuum of, you know, where you are, age and stage in your career, but also, you know, the environment and situations you put into. You have to be adaptable and flexible. And I actually mentioned this in my interview with Robbo, was we actually failed a lot in our first year and a half. The landscape was really different. We you know, came across a lot of roadblocks that we probably didn't foresee, but, you know, stuck with it, really quick to learn and to look at how to implement some change. And then enjoyed a really nice run into the World Cup in 2019. And being hosted in Japan, it was a really special time. And we just wanted to play for the country. We wanted to play a brand of rugby that inspired. And I guess my role was with two really great coaches with a great vision, was just to give them a team of robust guys that could be on the field and do what they needed. And to go through pool play undefeated, you know, in their own country for the first time, you know, to make the quarterfinals was really cool, really special.
It was an amazing achievement, wasn't it, for Japanese rugby as well, and obviously something on your resume you must be really proud of.
Yeah, as I said, like I was really fortunate to have great visionaries as coaches, and you know, we definitely had to earn my stripes over there with those coaches, but yeah, once we had a plan and direction, it was cool, you know, and they back you fully, and that's the best thing you can ask for from a coach is if they start sort of, I guess, selling your product to the players as well. So incredibly fortunate, and yeah, as I say, amazing country to do it in, and the people are so respectful and special over there. It was really nice to, I guess, pay back for the experience they provided my family and I.
Well, speaking of your resume and something you're really proud of, the All Blacks strength and conditioning coach there. How was that? What was that experience like?
Yeah, so just to make sure I get that across the lines, All Blacks 15, which
All
is,
Blacks
yeah,
15,
yeah, just don't want to take Gilly's job. He's been he's been locked in that for 15, 16 years, I think now. But it's a new team that they've developed, and a lot of the top rugby nations are now looking at creating, you know, that next tier down to just continue the development of players. But again, any time you get to put on, you know, your country's colours is a privilege. And it was really nice to, I guess, sort of be selected out of some other people to do that. And a nice extension piece, but again, to go on and learn. So you meet a group of players. You know, the NRL is such a different beast to international test football, like in terms of its duration, you know, how the players arrive and where you're at. So really different experience. But again, got to work with, you know, great athletes, which is always makes your job easy, really, because they're coming in already in pretty great shape, but also some really great coaches. So despite it only sort of being, you know, a short tour each year, really, really important learning experience and you know, getting to increase your breadth of knowledge, learn from some great people and make some great friends.
James, is it fair to say you strike me as someone who's a teacher, you know, for many levels and qualified, but you also seem to be a great student. Everything I'm hearing from you is you're constantly learning on a daily basis. Is that you're learning about people, about players, about strength, about conditioning? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't say I've probably been there all my time. Like as most of us do, I started out pretty young, and I can remember one of the coaches, I'd been at the Stags for about 3 years, and I think I admitted I was wrong one day, and he deliberately spilled his coffee and fell off the back of his chair and, you know, made this huge palaver. And he, you know, said, "Wake me up, I'm dreaming. I've just heard Jonesy say that he was wrong." So there was times, I think, you know, as you do, you go throughout your career and you learn there. But I think it's just like, you know, you're expecting from a player. Like, you know, a player at the peak of their powers is still always looking for, you know, for the next edge or how they can be better. And you know, like a player that's, you know, in their 30s is different to who they were in their 20s. So the same formula doesn't work. So just like a player has to be dynamic and continue to, you know, to evolve with who they are,
yeah,
how their body responds to, you know, to its demands. And, you know, we have to do that as coaches. And like for me, you know, the NRL is an amazing beast and a competition I really love being involved with. But, you know, if I'm honest, I've been here 6 seconds really. So, you know, it's still just being a sponge where I can. Adding flavour and obviously directing some stuff where I have an opinion. But at the moment, as I say, like it's observing, learning and, you know, and looking to see what we can build, you know, continually for this really successful club over the next few years.
Yeah. I was in New Zealand last week and I heard a stat from one of my best mates that lives in South Island, Darfield, that rugby league registrations have for the first time ever outgrown or been more than rugby union, and it must be the strength of the Warriors. Did you have much of a knowledge of rugby league growing up in the South Island or coming through as a coach even when you're in Japan? You know the game, of course, but did you watch much of it?
I did watch, but I wasn't a student of the game, so I didn't follow it. I sort of joked because, Alex at the Roosters asked me if I was a league fan or a footy fan, and I sort of joked back when, you know, Matthew Ridge was playing for Manly, and I sort of rattled off all the Kiwis. Brent Todd was playing for Canberra, Jared McCracken was playing for, you know, so you sort of look at that and you go, actually, from the mid-90s, I was really aware of, you know, what the NRL was, and then, you know, you follow that through. And so it's always been a game I've watched, but not a game that, you know, I was a student of or I had a particular team that I backed. But yeah, I'm loving the game more now with a greater understanding of the intricacies of it, you know, getting a greater appreciation for what these guys do and what the competition is. And I think a lot of other competitions are, you know, would love to have the sort of consistency and stability that the NRL has.
So the end of last year, you make your journey over from New Zealand and establish, you know, you're here now at the Roosters. Now the boys look, as we mentioned earlier, fighting fit and incredible. They look amazing. And all during the beginning of the season, everyone was saying, wow, even we were interviewing players on the podcast,
everyone.
And everyone was saying, oh, the preseason, it was death, you know. It was something that they'd never experienced before. I know you mentioned before Robbo had a plan and he came up for that, but what's your philosophy in getting a team ready for the season to come?
Yeah, I think it's often overcomplicated. You know, we do study excessively and we have experience, but often we miss the sights of, first and foremost, you know, if you're strong and fit, and being a healthy human first. So, you know, just because you're a fit athlete doesn't make you a healthy human. So we actually stripped some stuff back and looked at, you know, what we're eating, you know, focused on some of our recovery and just sleep in general. But what we did do is we pushed a massive fitness base. You know, you can be super fast, but if you're tired after a couple of runs, you know, your speed's no longer a weapon. So if you're fit and you're strong, you give yourself every chance of staying on the paddock and using your superpower, which for these guys is being an NRL footy player. So, you know, if you can give that footy player the ability to be at their best over and over and over again with a repeated high intensity nature. That was sort of it. So yep, we did some pretty full on sessions. We flogged them both off and on the field, and it was relentless. And what the players stepped up and did was my first insight into the mindset of an NRL player, like their capacity for work. For instance, finish a whole week of training in preseason with a Friday wrestle and walk out of that wrestle, saturated from head to toe. It's a pretty savage style, condition and session skill to do. But just to say thanks, mate, see you next week, and walking out like one as a professional, owning that's their trade, but, valuing and just knowing that that's what had to be done, it was nice to see.
Now, we had a little joke earlier off air. I believe Luke Keary mentioned something to you.
Yeah, no. So he feels that pre-season's retired him. He said if that's what the NRL's become, he doesn't want to stay. And I said, mate, well, obviously I'd hate to lose you because of who you are and how you play. But, mate, I'll take it as a compliment.
So, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, he was one of those bastards that walked in, didn't he? He said, oh, mate.
Yeah.
But he did say it was enjoyable.
Oh, well, they're all on fire at the moment for it. But let's touch on that because there was actually an interview Teddy had at the beginning of the year as well in regards to that. And he said the preseason was so different that he was actually talking about the older players. So let's say the GOATs, like the Jareds and the Toops and things like that. He said previously they didn't do as much as everybody else. But this year everybody was in. Everybody was doing the same from across the board. The young fellas were training like the old fellas. Is that something that you did deliberately?
Definitely. I think first and foremost is, they've still got so much to give. They're not out to pasture. They're not done. And as we can see that by how they're playing still currently now. So we didn't unload them. We didn't wrap them in cotton wool if they felt they needed it. Because obviously a senior player in this game will require modifications. They're putting their body on the line through, 2P 250, Jazza 300. It's amazing the games these guys rack up. So they're going to need modification. They've had these long careers. But to the players' credit, they recovered well, they're professional, and I think they surprised themselves with how much they got through. So a bit of careful planning in that, a slightly different mindset in a discussion with those guys. But no, it was that, and I think to grow a culture and to grow a vibe that brings the team together, we had 34 people in our final fitness test of the preseason, which was amazing. Previous years, which is not to cast any difference on how it was done, but you might have been 17 to 20. Now, there's lots of reasons for that in terms of, injury, where players are at with terms of their international careers. But that was what I was most proud of, not the number of the test or how good the score was, just the fact that we had a squad there, everybody was in and everybody tested. And as I said, you drop your ego a wee bit and go, you can make the fittest or the strongest or the fastest person because you don't need to make that person. You need to make a footy player. So the fact we had, these guys all ready to go, and I know Kingy sort of joked through preseason quite a bit, Matt King, around giving us headaches because there's too many players available for training. And I was like, mate, well, hey, we're winning. The as I say, the amazing other coaches and the S&C team and the physio team holding those guys together through a pretty savage preseason was testament to their skills and stuff too.
Jonesy, you've worked with so many athletes. I know you say you've been here 6 seconds, but for not 1 minute do we doubt that's overridden by all the experience you've had just with athletes in general. Can you define the difference between an athlete in your two or three chosen disciplines of athletics or sprinting, rugby union, or the 15-man game, which I'm a big fan of as well, or the 13-man game in the NRL? Is there a difference in athletes, or subtle difference, or is it just comes down to skill and nuances in the game itself?
I definitely have seen a difference. Obviously, I'm N equals one in terms of NRL teams. However, the player and the psyche is there, and I think you take any individual sport athlete, their internal drive is a little bit different. In team sport, there's obviously a social factor of why people want to play it. Like, genetically, I could be Greg Inglis and be an amazing NRL player because I'm built for it and I'm an absolute star. But I mean, he probably did that over other sports because he loved the connection of like people. As humans, we're like that, aren't we? We're drawn to people that want to do something for us. And, when you can find pride and passion in delivering something, with others, it makes it greater for us. And I guess for me, seeing team sport people go through the lows, it's a collective loss, it's a collective low, it's shared. And when they go through the highs, it's there. Now, obviously, individual sports people have a team of people around them, but it's slightly different. They're looking at every millisecond, they're shaving everything off. And that's a cool part of high performance to be in because, you're looking for, that point, whatever, every time you're there. Whereas in a team sport, you've actually got to put a whole lot of people together. And that's the real challenge. And that's why I don't envy, being being a head coach is because, you know, we can help with that by how we set up culture and we can drive those things. But ultimately, you know, you're bringing a team of people together and you've got to get them, you know, cohesive on the same page to buy and love one another and really get, you know, deliver a performance. And I think that's the unique thing that team sport brings different. Between rugby union and rugby league is probably the most common question I've been asked by everyone that I've possibly come across. And as I say, it's, I think it's the capacity for just the repetitive work in an NRL player is different. The ball
it's a different game though, right?
It is. The ball and play time is double.
Yeah.
You know, like someone in rugby union will be at the contacts are different and tackles are different. They, you know, a big game is 15, 16 tackles and you know, 10 carries, whereas that's a really low-level game for the NRL. And the contact is different. It's not as static. It's not Morley. It's you know, it's direct. It's at more speed. But, yeah, just that constant need to go. And now that I understand the intricacies of the game, like that's the probably the subtle difference. And then physically, we don't have a tight five. So the NRL, you're not dealing with, you know, with a tight five. But I think if you look at the product the NRL have created over the years with Six Again, you know, changing the rules, the body shape of the NRL athlete has changed, you know, over the last
so
couple of decades.
Now.
Yeah,
so fast.
There's some real rugby league tragics that make the mistake of thinking rugby's not as tough or as it is just definitely as skillful. And I would say to them one thing, I said, no worries. I said, I would love you to come down to any park in any afternoon and not at a professional level because you'll get killed. Just pack yourself down into a front row scrum for me, just for maybe one scrum, maybe not even half a scrum.
Yeah, there
are. And then just come back to me after that when I visit you in hospital and give me your decision.
Yeah, front rows are a special breed. Yeah, a special breed.
Oh, look, let's just touch on that and your opinion of it. Jared.
Yep.
307th game on the weekend. Like a goat.
Yes.
And his body. And I mean, you know, it's his last season here at the Roosters this year, but he's going to continue on. I know he's going to continue on overseas and abroad. But yeah, like he is phenomenal, isn't he?
He is, and he carries himself so well, and I know it's been well publicised, but when he made his 300th appearance in the NRL before the 307 for the club, I just sort of thanked him. I said, mate, you listen to my stories. You've made me feel welcome. As you can tell, I'm a bit of a chatter. So, you know, there's probably times he got pegged with some stories that he didn't need to be there that long, but, you know, and he's also honest, which has been great. So he's been one of the you know, sort of provides a bit of a compass for you here with how you're going, you know, where he can steer you. And I love the fact that he's like that. But like even today, if we keep things as current as possible, it was probably a hell of a physical game he played in the weekend. And obviously led in so many ways with his intent and his physicality and probably trained like out of the boys today, you know, one of the hardest. It's just who he is. He's got an amazing mindset. I think as a lot of athletes probably do later in their career, he knows how hard you've got to work on the body to keep it out there. But to his credit, I see him stretch. I see him in getting his treatment. You know, a great professional, and this is a guy that's you know, being a great dad and a bit of a leader at our club. And from what I've seen of him, he's the one that'll stop and talk to you know, the tiny kids, to the ex players, always with a smile on his face and provide time. But then also be the one that's at the gym early stretching, nailing his recovery, but also leading the way in his intensity. So. There's no surprise for me. I didn't really know. I knew who Jazza was coming in. Didn't really know a lot about him, but watching his intent in preseason as one of the, as you say, one of the, I guess, the older guys, the goats of the team, how hard he went until he had nothing, and then still how hard he went when there was nothing. There's no surprise for me. He's been able to get to where he is because he fronts that way and trains that way, and you know, you play how you prepare, and he prepares very well.
Does that help you, Jonesy, build this amazing culture that, you know, you're part of building that culture with Robbo and, you know, the other S&C coaches and everything else, but doesn't it make your job easier when the alpha male is the benchmark? And to build a culture, if he's doing that, then everyone else just kind of goes, oh, okay, then we'll just fall in behind. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely is. And when you have, you know, the guy that's effectively put his body on the line the most, you know, step up and train and play the way he does. It definitely should be an inspiration for other players. Like I know for me at training sometimes I'm not going, shit, Jazz, you know, almost sometimes you need to back off, you know, just because of, you know, his own body, how hard he's pushing himself. But yeah, it certainly does make, I think, you know, the job for us and the coaches easier to see people like that, and he gets them on board and gets them along. But he makes time for the young ones. But what I also do is he won't mince his words, and he'll let them know too if they're not off standard. And I think I sometimes throw around a fancy term, horizontal accountability. But, you know, if the players can drive each other rather than it always be coach-led or top-down, that's when you really know you're winning. And so having some amazing guys like Jazza and some other really good leaders, if they're driving your culture, but then actually, you know, younger guys even feel they can call out the older guys, that's the utopia you're looking for. So yeah, having people like Jazza in there that helps with that is a really, really awesome start, yeah.
I love that message, Bells. I mean, we got a lot of fans on here that have passed their football career, retired. There's a lot of business owners, just Roosters fans. I think that's even in families, you know, if the family's driving the culture, you know, it's not always coming from mum or dad or top down. It's such a key takeaway in this podcast. Thank you for sharing that.
No, anytime.
I wanted to ask something probably more. I mean, I have the gym up here on the Central Coast, which we're currently doing the interview for.
The beautiful
from.
Impact Gym.
Yeah, that's right.
Which you can join from Sydney.
The boys are up here for a couple of day training camp. But you mentioned before, Jared, and the recovery. Let's talk about recovery. How important is it? Because I see young kids in here, kids training, you know, just if you can touch on it slightly, just for the younger children that are trying to make it up into the higher grades of football and whatnot, how important is recovery in regards to the whole of the fitness to be an excellent player?
Yeah, there's lots of different ways you could term it in terms of it's actually a training session in itself, recovery, but recovery is really your lifestyle. And you can strip it back to, you know, the timing of a nutrition. If you're going to go and exert yourself, whether it be on field or in the gym or wherever it might be, you know, you do need to make sure you're eating straight away afterwards, but then you've got to make sure that, you know, you sleep really well. So the two key things that we often overlook, we're happy to go and buy skins and massage and foam rollers and compression garments and, you know, game readies and all these other things, which are fantastic. But often we just forget to have enough sleep. And to eat really well. And if I go back to probably one of my first points, I think was elite athletes are not always healthy humans. So if you can be a really healthy human first, you know, you give yourself, you know, really good sleep and good food, then your body is going to get the adaptation or the change you're trying to bring about from your body. So if you're wanting to get stronger and build lean muscle mass, you can't do that if you're not sleeping and eating really well. Now, you can be really specific with what you're eating and when you're eating and how, for sure, but just sometimes we overlook the basics of that. But recovery is really important, and Rad's challenged me just in a meeting. I was celebrating all the deposits, you know, around the hard work we were putting in, and I sort of was treating it like a bank account. And I said, "Boys, you've established a really massive bank account, but as you know, we can't just live off our savings. We've got to put in a few more deposits." And you know, my role was, I guess, celebrating that. And we're just sort of walking out of the meeting, and he said, "Mate, surely recovery is making a deposit." And I actually said, "Mate, hey, really great point. It is, and I should have celebrated that better because, you know, all the other investments we're making in ourselves, whether it be really hard running, off-feet conditioning on our ergs and things, the wrestle room we're doing, the weights, the rugby, if we don't actually recover from that, we don't get return on that investment because, you know, we stay sore or the body doesn't adapt in the way we'd like it to. So recovery is huge. And as I say, the simple takeaway message for that would be eating. So eating a healthy diet, but then also eating in and around training. You don't want to train and then leave yourself hungry for a long period of time. So normal basic life facts come in here. You need to be organized. You need to be well planned because, you know, you want to take food with you, not be having to buy something that's maybe not ideal from somewhere else.
I mean, this is for everyone, really, isn't it? Not just it's for everyone. Yeah,
I like to keep going.
I'm just loving this.
Don't stop talking.
Keep going. So be organised.
So to be organised in that space. And then, it's basic. You know, we overlook sleep. So we monitor the boys' sleep. We ask them to tell us how much sleep they get and the quality of sleep they have. Mm-hmm. One is a little bit just then for them to be mindful that we value it and we think it's important, but also if there is a little bit of an issue that they've had a bad sleep or poor sleep, you know, we value it that much that, you know, one of the staff would go and have a conversation with that person that day and said, "Hey, is everything okay? How are you feeling? Where's the energy at?" Because it's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a marker for us.
How much sleep should we get, Jonesy? Well, the athletes, I mean, anyone.
And us.
But just anyone you're working with in the Roosters.
Yeah, I mean, the 8-hour rule's been around for forever. However, you do know that people can survive off, you know, off different amounts. And you'll all know from colleagues in the workforce and everything else, those people that, you know, they need 10 to 12 hours. Otherwise, they're just not good people. You know, they struggle. And then you've got those others that seem to sort of be able to function without. But one of the key things about sleep, without becoming sort of too deep in the detail, is more regularity. So, like, you know, are you sort of trying to sleep at a similar time each night and trying to wake at similar times? Now, obviously, we're always going to have social events and things that come up. But, you know, on the whole, if you can sort of have more regular sleep patterns, that's sort of shown as much as our hours of sleep as well to help us. Because the body likes to have a cycle, it likes to have a routine. And if we're sort of a bit all over the place, it's kind of like you're shocking your body all the time. So, yeah, like whether it's 7 hours every night or whether it's 10, if you can try and sort of have similar, you know, sleep patterns in terms of the time you go to sleep and the time you wake up. Sleep science itself is, I mean, you could get someone in here with, you know, PhDs in sleep science. There's so much into it. But, yeah, again, just one of those simple things that we probably overlook in terms of that.
Can I ask your philosophy on, you know, we've got some, well, Minnie is our nutritionist at the club. Your personal philosophy as a former athlete yourself, a high performance coach. I mean, I look at you and you are lean, fit, healthy, strong. You're the leader of our, you know, S&C and our players. Your philosophy on nutrition, does that vary or does it change? What's your personal philosophy?
My personal philosophy is, you know, moderation and balance. But that is because I don't think everybody out there, some people that can't afford, you know, certain styles of food and diet should be, you know, compromised because there's an elite diet out there. Always whole foods first if you have the opportunity, because whole food is better for us. You know, it's, we all know it limits inflammation, it's natural, so we want to be doing as much whole foods as we can first. But for me, it's around sort of everything in moderation. If we limit too much of our diet, even if we're limiting our diet to, say, four or five really healthy foods, we actually start to limit a lot of the gut health stuff that you get from having a variety of things and you know, mixing different things up. So my personal view is I don't like to call things diets, because diets is like, no, you can't. It's restrictive. You know, if someone's on a diet, it's sort of a deficit model of you're not allowed something. So for me, it's my view of nutrition is one, education, because most people, especially today on social media, are not actually educated. They sort of see something, it's a fad, and you know, I'd like to do that. But I'm not a nutritionist. I've studied nutrition papers, but I don't claim to be a dietitian or nutritionist, and that's why I've got again. You know, Bree at the...
It's an athletic perspective. It's your personal
she's
perspective.
She's got there. But, you know, whole foods first, but a variety of foods. But also, you know, take you know, the standard person out there listening, and athletes included, is, you know, they probably eat well 80, 85% of the time. But what do? They focus on the one burger they had in the weekend, and then they go, I've made a mistake with that. But if any of us scored 85% in a test, we'd probably be pretty pumped.
Yeah.
You know, but yet... But
is the 80-20 rule okay? Because I work off 60-40, but I'm trying to get 80-20.
Do you know what? C's get degrees and 60's still a pass.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's room for improvement, but... Yeah, As the human brain does, we sort of focus on the negative things we do for ourselves. It's kind of like, you know, the positive votes don't seem to register, but the one negative we do sort of, you know, it's compounded. So, you know, you have, what are we, you know, 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, there's 21 meals. If you add some snacks to that, you know, add another 14, 35, let's say you're eating 35 times a week, you know, if you eat really well for 30 of those, you're going to be a pretty healthy person.
Yeah.
But yet people, you know, they can't get past sometimes the restrictiveness of a diet. So that's probably my thing is whole foods first where you can.
Yep.
Eat a variety of foods that are balanced, because obviously that it's great for our gut health and the range of nutrients and minerals that we sometimes maybe miss if we're restrictive. But ultimately, you know, if you have real serious, you know, nutritional or dietitian, you know, goals that you need, go see someone. You know, there's support and places to go with that. So yeah.
Just as a former sprinter, my I suppose assumption is that you would have been extremely flexible and big on stretching to get the maximum out of your performance. Have you brought that into the game? And just for both athletics or non-athletic listeners here, what's your philosophy there?
Yeah, so I guess myself is probably, if anything, I probably overstretched back in the day. We've learned that, you know, if you take too much of the elasticity out of your muscle, you know, it's probably not as powerful as it could have been. So, you know, you learn these things. But I think if rather than stretching, I sort of talk about athletic development and mobility. So, yes, I do like to have mobility at the start of the day. And we always used to sort of do recovery at the end of the day, right? It was like, end of the day, let's try and get guys stretching. Let's get them through the ice baths. Let's get them through the pools. And one thing I really like to sort of try and encourage, and it's certainly been picked up in previous teams, and the Roosters have their own spots where we do this as well, is we actually do mobility early in the day. So it's kind of like, you know, you're taking care of some of your recovery early, and even though it could be seen as training preparation, maintaining range of motion through our key joints, our limbs and our muscles, you know, is a great way to also prevent injury. So it's kind of like, you know, you can front door your recovery rather than always have it at the end of the, you know, end of the day. So that is something I guess I've sort of brought over. And then, you know, other little principles, you know, again, I've said, you know, the other coaches do this amazingly well as that are the other S&C coaches and the physios is, you know, drilling different movement competencies of things. So you keep the quality of the movement there for sure. It is something that you bring over from some of those other things. Obviously, sprinters are right on that edge the whole time. You know, we always joke about hammies going sprinters, but I mean, that's because their particular thing, they want to be right on the limit and they're challenging themselves for something that's right on the limit. You know, we don't quite need that in our sport, but you'd certainly take some of the learnings from that. And as you say, if you want to be quite explosive and powerful, you don't want to be too limited in your range because one, you'll either get injured or you are a little bit compromised in your ability to produce force.
Awesome. So interesting. It's fantastic.
It's fascinating.
It's something that we can take just as not athletes.
That's what I mean. It's mobility for everyone. It's it's really, really fascinating. So thank you.
Well, I've got a few questions from the fans.
Yeah, cool.
Now, who's the fittest?
Who's the fittest? I'm gonna be horrible here and sit on the fence because obviously fitness could be determined in a number of ways.
Mm.
If you took work rate on field, which is possibly one of the most important factors we'd have, you know, you can't sort of go past someone like maybe Reds. The job that he does each week in his position obviously can move, you know, between the two there. But his work rates in comparison to other people out there and the amount and volume of work he gets through, that's a very fit player. And the reason he's a fit player is because he's doing the exact style of fitness that we want him to do. Mm. So that's pretty cool. Connor Watson, he's incredibly fit. He's one of our fitter guys, and one of our fitness tests that we run is the Bronco. And obviously does really well in some of the other, you know, work and things that we do. You've got, as I say, I'm sitting on the fence and being a bit of an exercise geek here, but like, you know, Teddy's fit for the pack, his ability just to repeat, you know, at a high level over and over again. And he was actually one of our best yo-yo runners, which is our main fitness test that we do test. He was right up there as well. And I'm sort of thinking of some of the guys that play, because obviously we have a few youngsters come through, you know, and the guys that are spring chickens, they've got better springs and
age on their
side.
Yeah,
they've got age on their side without some of the injuries. So I guess if you're, you know, to take some of the named players from the guys that are out there being a warrior each week, that'd be some of the names. But to be fair, Sammy Walker, you know, even though he is smaller, he's still actually really fit. And like, you know, that's his
quite
superpower.
Strong too, huh?
Yep. And like, you know, I think that's, you know, if Sammy's listening, it's all good. But that's an area I'd love to see Sammy just embrace, is, you know, he's such an amazing player, and I just love him to embrace that strength side of it, you know, to keep his resilience there.
Yes.
But, you know, he pops up where he needs to and does those things on attack. And part of that is because he's got such a great capacity, fitness capacity. So, you know, his brain's clear and he's thinking well because he's not the red and he's not, you know, tired and fatigued. And, you know, he works really hard often. You know, we sort of, we joke because he's a real character, and, you know, people seeing him sort of, you know, playing basketball and stuff and things out on the field. But, yeah, we heart rate all the guys when we do fitness, and people can't hide from that. And Sammy, you know, he was right up there working despite, you know, scoring the highest in our running test. You know, he's still in there in the off-feet con, you know, putting his heart rate in the same place as everybody else. So, yeah, but I mean, I've named a different size of athlete there across those three or four names. And obviously they'll have different roles, but yeah, I think they're sort of some key ones that stand out.
And in the gym, so behind the plates, who's the strongest?
Gussie's pretty impressive. Like he's a big, powerful guy, so he squats and presses really well. And again, you know, you can have guys compromised in the gym that are really strong, but you actually don't want them doing certain style exercises. You know, it may sort of compromise their injury. But nah, Gussie's pretty impressive. You've got some other guys in there. You know, that are putting over some really nice powers. So Dommy Young, for instance, like the gym can be a strength orientated thing. It can be an explosive style thing. And obviously we've got Dom, Joe Sue's pretty explosive. We've got some really nice athletes coming through there.
Awesome. And relatively strength, like body weight to strength, like you were mentioning Sammy before.
Yeah, awesome question actually. Mm. So yeah, like that's actually the most important factor for any, I guess, aspiring S&C coaches out there. The most important factor for performance in any sort of locomotion sport where you want to accelerate or run is power to weight. Mm-hmm. You know, so no, strength to weight is important, but it's your ability to produce, you know, explosive power to weight is the thing that makes a player, you know, explosive, agile and dynamic. You know, so yeah, that's something that's really relative. So we measure that through different series of jumps and different, you know, sort of sports science tools we have to monitor that, and that's how we know that we're programming the right way. So, you know, we've got to hold ourselves accountable as coaches. Often you hear, you know, you test an athlete and it's about the feedback to the athlete is you're not fit enough or you're not this, but the main reason we test is so we can program, individualize our programming, but also then hold ourselves accountable to the plans we write. You know, Robbo halfway through the year wants to know where we're at. We need to be able to show him. And, you know, smart men, you can't bluff. So so with, you know, a good coach like that, he'll need to see proof. So, but any really good S&C coach is going to want to hold themselves accountable because they're wanting to, you know, do a good job for the players. That's why we're all here. You know, we love what we do. Incredibly fortunate to do what we do. I've always seen the 15, 16 years of what I've done as a real privilege to date because, yeah, I jump out of bed every day.
You can tell you love what you do. And we love listening to it.
So that's something I'm really, you know, you sort of don't take for granted. Like anything, you might have up days and down days. But ultimately, if you step back and take a look from the sort of the helicopter view, it's, you know, it's pretty cool. And so, yeah, any strength coach or conditioning coach that's wanting to make a difference, you know, should be measuring that difference because otherwise you're just writing a story, you know. You're not really, you know, sure of anything that's there. So,
another fan question. Who's the cheekiest around training?
Oh, that'd be Sammy Walker. Like, there's great ones. So there's banter between different players and staff, but if I was to say who's sort of cheeky across, he's pretty good. A few of the other boys, like Gus, he doesn't mind sort of putting on a bit of a chip. Actually, to be honest, that's the NRL player for me. You know, you're sort of talking about different characters before. Like when we're in LA, we had a lot of bus trips, obviously, to and from training, and then we went to Vegas. And the banter back and forth between the boys from the moment the bus trip started to stopped was just relentless. On the way to the gym, on the way to training, only time it wasn't obviously was game day when we'd locked it down. But they're just all into each other, and it's just relentless to the point where, you know, I sort of thought I had pretty high energy. And I was just like, wow, these guys are just great. They just keep going. Awesome. So there's characters across the board for sure. But no, Sammy's always that wee one that's got something cheeky to say, or, you know, trying to kick a ball between your legs, which is, you know, you don't want to have that happen, and a few other things. And so, yeah,
like the little brother around the club, you know, the little cheeky one. Hey?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's him for sure.
Changey, what do you do to relax? What do you do when you're away from football, and what do you enjoy?
Ironically, training. Often just because it's time and space to myself. Like, you know, our roles are pretty social. You know, you're constantly there, conversations and in front of people and listening. And listening is certainly not my superpower. So sometimes just to spend some time by myself in the gym is good. Spending time with the wife and kids. And then you're getting outdoors. So, like, Sydney's obviously a little bit different for that. But we found ourselves a place pretty close to Centennial Park, so that ticks a lot of boxes. Get the dog into the park, get into there, and you know, just be outside and things. So, yeah, and then music, yeah. So,
oh, nice. And how old are the kids?
I've got two girls. They're 9 and 6.
Got a good little budding athletes amongst them.
Yeah. We just let them do what they like to do. So at the moment, they're both into their gymnastics, and if one day they decide they want to trial something else, we'll do that. So, the oldest has just started playing netball at school, and the youngest has just started taking some tennis lessons. So, you know,
surrounded by girls, hey?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, yeah. So no, they're great. They keep me on my toes, which is pretty cool. And it's not really something you probably know until you have kids, but they sort of do become your why a little bit. And obviously they got to experience a life and a culture in Japan. You know, they've then obviously grown up back home, and now, you know, they're getting hopefully you know, pretty good experience here in Sydney. They seem to have settled pretty well. My wife did a great job at, you know, getting the kids into school and settling them into a routine that was similar to home, you know, with, as I say, the gymnastics and a few other things that they like to do back there. So, yeah.
And finally, Jonesy, working with Trent Robinson, he comes with a great reputation. He's a very experienced coach. He's, you know, one of the best coaches in the game. Young coaches, I will still say. What have you learnt most from Bobo and working with him that, you know, you've applied in your own life or in some of your working philosophy?
Probably there's two words that came up in the job description and the interview process, and it was ambition and courage. And people that know Robbo will know that Robbo likes to think outside the box. But I think he likes to think outside the box where there's a need, not just for a random point of he wants to be different. So I think me being here, you know, shows his ambition and courage to probably find someone that is a little bit out of the box. He's possibly the reason, well, more than likely the reason that I actually came over. My conversations with him, in and around the role, what he was looking for, some insights is actually what enticed me to come over. Like, I had a job, I was happy where I was, and I was invested in the team that I was with. It was my home franchise, you know, you're quite passionate about that. But there was just something about the conversations I had with him. I could see that he would in his own way challenge me and bring the best out of it. He's incredibly open. You know, I can walk into his office literally at most times, unless, you know, he's obviously in a meeting, and he's open, he wants to listen, and he's really open to challenge. And I think that's pretty amazing for a head coach of his tenure here, what he's achieved with the club, you know. And he's also very reflective, and I think that's something that I really appreciate, because he's honest and reflective and goes, no, we need to be better, I need to be better. He talks about his own failings of where, you know, he knows he's maybe misled his energy or where he could put something else. And because of that, incredibly easy to work with. You know, we'll challenge you, which is fantastic, but he's open to hear, he's open to listen. And that's probably something I'm learning from him is in my conversations with him, is his willingness to be challenged and to hear, to consider, and then to come back and, you know, and have a good conversation with after that. So, no, I really enjoy my time with him so far, and hopefully feels we're doing all right, and I can maybe come back and talk next year if he keeps me on.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, you won't be going in, mate. We already know. I said to him outside. So,
yep, part, you know, of the family.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, on behalf of the fans, we just want to thank you, A, for the interview and the opportunity to sit down and just get some of those insights. We certainly on Roosters Radio are of the fans, by the fans and for the fans, and we don't want to give away our secret recipe in case those bloody oppositions get a hold of it. But this has been so insightful, so energetic and really, really positive interview for us. So thanks very much for your time. And long may this great success continue.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm loving the journey, and awesome to meet some other, you know, great Roosters people, and to continue to grow that connection in the family, which is something I've really valued about the club. So really appreciate it.
Oh, awesome, Jonesy. Thanks so much.
East to win, I say, Bells.
Yes, definitely.
Are you ready? Yeah! Give me an A! Yeah! Give me an A! Yeah! Give me an A!
Welcome back to Roosters Radio and Bells. What a great interview. What a really good insight. He's a terrific human.
That was awesome. Just for, like, obviously he's our head of performance and yep. He looks after our boys and he's got them to this amazing physique and everything at the moment just to be playing their best football. But what I took out of that is just some information for us, everyday living and just training. You know, we all try and go for a walk, or the recovery part, the sleep part, the nutrition. It's just so informative and it was just a great chat.
Just a great chat, but a great chat for anyone who's a fan, who's an athlete, who's a budding young rooster, who's retired, who, you know, maybe has had time off from the gym. He talks about that, you know, the healthy human principle, and I think it's a really good insight. So I think the fans are going to love that interview, and, you know, thank you very much again to Simon Jones for great insights. And he didn't give away all the herbs and spices the way it's cooked, but he gave us enough to go away with and think about sleep, you know, think about nutrition, think about not being too tough on yourself like I am when you have a burger or something, you know what I mean? Just enjoy that
one a week, he said. I was like, what about if you have three? Now listen,
a bit like that.
We've got the bye this weekend. Boys are off for a few days and then we'll be back 20th of July. So the following weekend after Origin, we all head down to Melbourne. We're going down there as well. The big big sponsor trip is happening that weekend. We take on the Storm that Saturday. So we're looking forward to it and we're going to bring home obviously the win for us.
Absolutely, down in Melbourne. Be a tough game, as always is, all those one-point victories in Adelaide and all those different things. And a quick shout-out to our divine leader on Roosters Radio, Cooper Silk, who's over in Vietnam.
Yes, learning a well-deserved holiday with his family.
He is, with his family, and also doing some Tai Chi to sort of calm his mind a bit and just get in touch with his more spiritual side. He's a global traveller, Silk. He's a man of many talents, but it'd be nice to see him come back.
He's over there going,
just slightly relaxed.
Back so calm.
Just slightly relaxed in a Bruce Lee-esque style move and just slow down his karate.
Well, that's all we've got time for on Roosters Radio today. We would love to thank our very special guest, Simon Jonesy Jones, Head of Performance, and Bush in the studio up on the Central Coast. And as we always say,
East to win.
East know how to play the game, they play it hard and fair. East know how to win the game, they give more than their share. They're great to see in action. These boys who show the